PTC is go.
Thank you, this is go.
PTC is go.
Copy, this is go.
Houston flight is go.
Molotov.
STM is go.
Safety comp is go.
STU is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director, NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Right Side Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So, buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, and Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. Good evening, Diane.
Good evening. I was going to say good morning. Good evening. When you didn't get much sleep last night, you know, it all blurs in together.
Well, you know, neither one of us get much sleep normally, and you got even less last night. So
yes. I mean, I was up watching all the old shows, and just one after another, and no matter what I did, I just couldn't fall back asleep.
Well, sometimes that's just the way it happens. You know,
true.
There's just not a whole lot person can do about it, and you just have to deal with it. But, man, I'll tell you, by evening the next day, you're pretty much done.
Yes.
I know the feeling, so.
I'm sleep sitting here.
Yeah, well, try and stay awake at least for the next 90 minutes.
I will, because I have to watch Star Trek, so I have to stay awake.
You know, since we last met, they got that starship off the ground down in Texas, in Boca Chica, Texas. And good Lord, what a deal that was.
You're talking about the grain silo with fins.
Yeah, the flying grain silo. Yes. Elon Musk Starship. They got it up to 41,000 feet. And I'll tell you something. When they lit the candle on that thing and it took off so slow, I thought this ain't going to make it 12 feet off the ground.
But it did.
41,000 feet. Then it did its belly flop maneuver. Those goofy looking fins worked perfectly. And, I don't know, a couple hundred feet before it gets to the ground, it stands itself straight back up and relit the rockets. Now, of course, the landing was a little abrupt.
Oh, you mean splat?
Cratering the thing. But that didn't bother Elon Musk. He came out the next day and said, putting the crater exactly on target was epic.
Yeah. Yeah, it did land on target. It just didn't land upright on target.
Well, it was upright. It just didn't stay that way. It hit the ground and just exploded.
Yeah.
You know, and that's pretty much what they expected would happen, and it did. But they got a lot of great data out of that, and a lot of the systems they tested on it, they all work perfectly fine.
True.
What an odd looking thing to go flying up into the air.
Yeah, it doesn't have the sleekness of the rockets we're used to seeing, but it gets the job done, and that's all that matters.
Well, and it will look more sleek when they get the part they launched the other day mounted on the rest of the rocket. I mean, the 160-foot section they launched at 41,000 feet, that is actually only the second stage of the rocket.
True.
You know, so the whole thing is going to be like 399 feet tall when it's completely assembled. So it'll look a lot different then. But earlier this week, it just looked like a flying grain silo.
Yeah, it did. It kind of did.
But it was cool. I enjoyed every minute of it. And I've watched that video, I can't even tell you how many times, because it just fascinates me. But folks, look, we got political stuff to talk about tonight, and plenty of it. Diane, you're covering Trump's last two stands tonight.
Yes.
I'm covering COVID-19 and fraud 2020.
Okay.
All right. But before we get to any of that, we've got a couple other things that we need to kind of get into a little bit here. Let's start with Hunter Biden.
Oh, dear. What a piece of work that man is.
Work isn't exactly the word I was thinking of, but...
No, it wasn't what I was thinking of either, but still, you know...
We'll go with that.
Yeah.
He is under investigation right now. Tax situation is what they're calling it. A tax situation. Yeah, it's a situation, all right.
Right, and it has to do with him raking in $6 million in just 9 months from Chinese business dealings. And that, folks, doesn't include a 2.8-carat diamond the Chinese gave him as a little gifty.
Good Lord. $6 million in 9 months. That's a pretty good gig if your dad can get it for you.
Isn't it, though? And you know what's funny is these transactions were flagged for potential financial criminal activity, according to a Senate report. Not taxes, but criminal activity. And I got news for you, folks. His dad knew all about it and benefited financially from it as well.
You bet he did. You bet. Now, here's the thing. Right now, they're calling it a tax investigation.
Mm-hmm. Right?
You know very well it's going to go a lot further than that.
Of course.
You know, because when you open up the can of tax worms, you wind up opening a big can of whoop-ass.
True.
That's what's going to happen here. Now, Biden was out and about, limping around yesterday, and apparently the press kept shouting questions at him regarding the tax situation his son is in. Mm-hmm. And he just ignored all the questions, Joe did, except when Peter Ducey from Fox News asked whether Hunter Biden had committed a crime. Okay. Joe said, "I'm proud of my son."
Yeah. He's proud that his son is a criminal and a drug addict.
Yeah.
What a proud moment for that family, right?
What's not to be proud of? I mean, you think about it. You know, the kid's getting diamonds. He's you know, raking in the millions, and you're pocketing a lot of it. You know, there are reports out there that say Joe was getting 50%.
Yeah. He was influence peddling.
Yeah. And Bobulinski, is that the guy's name?
Yeah, Bobulinski.
Bobulinski's back in the news because he came out and said, "Look, I'm telling you flat out, Biden lied about his son's business dealings."
Of course he did. But this is funny. You know, he got a $5 million payment from a Chinese energy company with ties to the Communist Party. He got $1 million for work with an associate who was later jailed for bribery. I mean, The Senate report actually concluded that Hunter's business associates were, in their own words, linked to the communist government and the People's Liberation Army. I mean, that's not taxes, folks.
No, that goes a lot deeper than taxes.
A lot deeper.
You know,
he and his father both belong in a padded cell.
It's going to be interesting as time rolls on to see how all this unfolds and what else floats to the surface.
I think a lot will.
I kind of feel that way, too. I agree. But, you know, Hunter's not the only one right now that's in Dutch with the Chinese.
True. True.
Swalwell.
Yes. He's an intelligence committee member, folks. So this is not really great. But he's got allegations of spying against him, and that's serious, folks. He's a Democrat from California, by the way.
You know, Jim Sensenbrenner, he's a Republican. He sent a letter over to the House urging, use your air quotes, urging the panel to immediately open an investigation into allegations that Eric Swalwell had been compromised by a suspected Chinese spy. Right. You know, this letter says, I respectfully request the House Committee on Ethics immediately open an investigation into the allegations recently made public by an article in Axios regarding the compromising of Representative Eric Swalwell, a member of Congress and a member of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Apparently, he was getting, Swalwell, was getting a little bit too cozy with Fang Fang.
Right. Actually, her name is Christine Fang, the name that she goes by here in this country. And apparently, he had an affair with her, but she's not such a sweet, innocent little thing. You know, she actually has been reported to be romantically involved with at least two mayors from the Midwest as well. So she's, you know, her little spying abilities are not just limited to California.
I don't think it's her spying abilities that's attracting mayors and congresspeople.
I don't think so. Well, I think it's a combination of both the fact that she is a Russian spy and the fact that she is a Chinese. I was looking at something that was just coming through one of my wires, something with Russia, but it had nothing to do with politics. It just, the word Russia caught my eye. But she's got a pretty long history of spying.
Yeah, she does. And right now, they're trying to get more information about, you know, the depth of this relationship. But they don't know exactly how much classified information Fang had access to through this relationship with Swalwell. And you know, but I'm telling you right now, that guy, he's about as greasy and grimy as they come.
Yes.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised. She got a lot of information from him.
Well, some of the information was not gotten directly by her, but because of her. Because what she did back in 2015 was convince him to place a certain intern in his congressional office, an intern that she was very close with.
Now, lost in all of this, we got to go back a couple of years, a few years, but remember when Dianne Feinstein had a Chinese spy that was her chauffeur?
For 20 years and she didn't know it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, this the Chinese, and you notice that all the people they're connected to seem to be Democrats?
Of course they are.
I mean, the Bidens, Swalwell, Feinstein. I mean, the list just goes on and on.
I know. It's just great. And what's funny is Nancy Pelosi was the one who appointed him to the House Intelligence Committee, which actually gave him the right to certain documents that other members of Congress aren't privy to. So we got a little Pelosi tie in there, too.
Right. We got to wonder how deep that goes.
Exactly. If you got Dianne Feinstein oblivious to China, she's got at least more of her mental capacity than Pelosi does.
Well, are we sure of that? Because there's also now reports coming out from people that are or were, I guess is probably the best way to put it, part of Feinstein's staff that are saying that her mental capacity is diminishing.
Well, she's what, 80, 89 years old or something like that?
She's well in her 80s.
She's well in her 80s. You know, there comes a time when these people, Pelosi included, need to know it's time to step down and let the next generation take over. I don't care how with it you are at a certain age, if your health is great, I don't care. Certain mental faculties do diminish with advanced age.
Yeah.
It's just a medical fact.
I look at this thing with Swalwell, and, you know, he apparently cut off his relationship, or at least he claims to have cut off his relationship with Fang 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Actually, okay. 6 years ago, he's now saying.
But what about the intern? What about the potted plant in his office? I mean, this is
still there.
Yeah, I mean, this is the way this crap goes down. You know, it's not a one-off deal. And so you just wonder how much information actually got through either to Fang directly from Swalwell or from this office intern in his office going to Fang. I mean, of course, he's not talking. Swalwell, he doesn't have anything to say about it.
No, of course not. In fact, he issued a statement through his office that long ago he provided information about this person, meaning Fang, whom he met more than 8 years ago and whom he hasn't seen in nearly 6 years. And he provided that to the FBI, supposedly. And now what he's claiming to protect information that might be classified, he won't participate in any interviews or stories or articles or such. You know, the cover-up begins.
Yeah, here we go. You know, and he was one of the ones yelling the loudest about Trump and the Russians.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Here he's shacking up with a Chinese spy.
Nice, right?
You just got to wonder what the hell is going on there. You found something interesting, a poll taken today about whether or not Trump won the election.
Yeah, very, very interesting things. In fact, a Fox News poll just came out today. And as expected, most Trump voters, most of us, who support President Trump, a full 77%+ of us actually say the election was stolen from Trump. 68% of all Republicans say the election was stolen from Trump. 26% of independents say that as well. But here's the kicker. 10% of Democrats say the election was stolen from Trump. And then it goes on to say that Trump disputing the results of the election has 56% say it's weakened the American democracy, but 36%, including Democrats, say it has actually strengthened democracy. And you know what these people are forgetting is we're not a democracy, we're a republic.
Well,
and
yeah,
democracy is mob rule. But
yeah,
here's the kicker.
Democracy is used generically. Just like you use Kleenex for any kind of tissue. So.
Well, they need to know their constitution a little better. But they also took a poll of how many people want Trump to run again in 2024 in case this Supreme Court case doesn't work out. Trump voters, 79% of us want it. Republicans, 71% want it. Independents, 27% want it. And again, 10%, a full 10% of Republicans want him to run again.
No, of Democrats.
Of Democrats, I'm sorry. Of Democrats want him to run again. And 85% of those who believe Trump was robbed want to see him run again as well.
You know, those are really some fascinating numbers when you start breaking it down. You know, when you get up into the high 70%, that's unheard of in almost any poll.
Okay? Exactly.
The 68% of all Republicans is still excessively high in any poll. You know, the fact that independents are leaning that way, and you wouldn't think there'd be even one Democrat that would own up to that. But when 10% of Democrats own up to it, that's pretty stunning.
What's interesting, if you add the 68% of Republicans, the 26% of independents, and then you throw in the 10% of Democrats, you have over 100% of the people, or just about 100%, wanting Trump to run again.
You know, it's really an interesting situation. And when you look at those numbers a little bit more, when you start to break those numbers down a little bit more, in the middle of all that, you had some really interesting numbers too. Not whether or not the election was stolen from him, but what was that set of numbers in the middle?
Okay, about weakening and strengthening, but those numbers are a little misleading, because 66% of Republicans say that the president's actions, which include filing lawsuits, of course, are helping American democracy, while 84% of Democrats and 54% of independents think he is harming it.
Okay, so let's stop right there. Let me tell you what I'm thinking here. You've got a very high number of Democrats and a reasonably high number of independents that think challenging this is hurting the democracy. So in other words, the only way our democracy remains strong is if we allow cheating?
Exactly.
What the hell are these people thinking?
Exactly. They don't care. Whoever wins, wins, whether by hook or by crook. But what they don't understand is, and I'm sorry, they keep going back to the word democracy. Democracy is mob rule, folks. That is the definition of democracy. We are a republic. We elect representatives to represent us. Okay, we're not a democracy. And the sooner these people, these talking heads, these politicians get that word out of their heads, I think the better off we'll be.
Well, I agree with you, but it doesn't really change the outcome of this particular poll. Substitute representative, however you want to put it. You know, we're a representative democracy. We're a republic. Word it however you want. The simple fact of the matter is a very high number of people on the left and in the middle, the independents, think that challenging this, questioning this, trying to get to the bottom of this is hurting, and that the only way to keep our form of government strong is to just simply roll over and allow cheating. That's staggering.
Well, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. You know, we Republicans and conservatives, we don't go out robbing, looting, stealing, committing arson. We don't do those things. However, I think we're at the breaking point of we've had enough of the cheating. We've had enough of the lying. We've had enough of the deceit. We've had enough of Obama butting into everything. We had enough of that witch Pelosi. Don't discount a possible a second American revolution of sorts, because we're not going to exist as a country if we keep allowing cheating to determine who are our leaders.
Well, and along those lines, in the few minutes we have left in this segment, there apparently are now two videos that are out there. Rudy Giuliani actually showed them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Two recently released videos that show Dominion voting system software making votes out of nothing.
Yeah. And folks, what that means is taking blank ballots and having them run through for Biden.
Apparently, according to these videos, this Georgia County election supervisor, he's the one that filmed this. Mm-hmm. It shows that you can take blank ballots, run them through the machine, and have them tabulate whatever you want. It also shows how a ballot marked for candidate A can be retabulated to candidate B.
Mm-hmm.
And the second video, this one is even more interesting. Okay, you remember, folks, a lot of the complaints that have been coming out from poll watchers say they were not allowed to be within eyeshot of what was going on, right?
Right.
Okay. So this is very interesting. The second video, the camera is taken outside of what is presumably an office for election supervisors, and it illustrates that poll observers would not be able to tell exactly what was going on if they were made to stand outside of that office.
Of course. This is, you know, they used COVID in this case and the social distancing nonsense as the reason why. Another way for them to get away with fraud.
Election supervisors with these mm-hmm. Dominion machines could manipulate the machines any way they saw fit.
Right.
And as long as the poll watchers were not able to see into the room, they could do it and nobody would know.
Right.
Now there's video evidence out there showing how it's done.
Just
unreal.
Just on the grounds of this and these latest videos, the Supreme Court needs to take up the Texas case immediately.
Yeah.
Let them earn their high-priced salaries and work over the weekend. Monday, folks, is the day the Electoral College meets, unless something happens over this weekend that it's delayed. There's no way around that.
I think we're going to have a weekend ruling.
I think so, too. And I'm telling you, and I've said this to Craig, if the SCOTUS does not rule to at least hear Texas's case, I believe it's because they're cowards, too afraid of the element, use your air quotes, put in anyone you want into that word, behaving badly, rioting, looting, arson, murders, etc. I think they're scared to death.
I think that plays a part in it. I think maybe they're looking at this and going, my God, if we actually rule the way this is, if we mm-hmm. rule honestly in this, it will create such a constitutional crisis. You know, I mean, I don't know exactly what they're scared of, but let me tell you something. Doing nothing creates a bigger crisis. Not adjudicating this, not fixing this, not taking care of the fraud, making sure it never happens again, not putting the light of day on it will actually make it worse.
Yes. No, well, that's what they think. But honestly, if you follow the letter of the Constitution, there is no constitutional crisis. It's
technically, you're right. Technically, you're right. But, geez Louise, they're going to have to make a ruling. And right now, it's a coin toss. If you're asking me, I'd say it's 50-50 either way.
I would like to lean in Texas's favor, but you know Roberts is going to stab Trump in the back.
You bet.
okay, which will then bring it down to 5 to 4. And I just have this sneaky, god-awful feeling, and I don't want to have it, but I have it, that Barrett will recuse herself.
I don't think she's going to recuse herself. I think what we're going to get is either a split decision in favor of Texas or a unanimous decision against them. That's what I think we're going to get.
If they go against them, those Supreme Court justices need to hang their head in shame, because I read that suit and It meets the letter of the law.
I agree.
And if they use that BS, it was filed late, they had to go through the hoops of the lower courts. I have said since day one, when Trump was deemed the loser of the election, he's got to get this to the Supreme Court immediately. His side did not have to waste all this time going through the BS Democrat lower courts.
Well, time will tell, and this weekend is going to be very, very interesting. But
I think so.
We're out of time in this segment, and that means we got to take a bottom of the hour break. When we come back, Diane's got it with Trump's last two stands. And about a half an hour from now, COVID-19 and Fraud 2020. So folks, hang on. More Right Side Patriots after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sori. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi, guys. Diane Sori from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on rspradio1.com. Craig Andreessen from The National Patriot, Diane Sori at The Patriot Factor. Friday night, December 11th, and welcome to it, folks. Glad you're with us tonight, because we got a lot to talk about and a busy weekend coming up, as we just told you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Diane, so you have decided to take on tonight Trump's last two stands.
Yes, and let's start with this quote from Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. He said, "Our job is to make sure that the Constitution is followed and that every vote counts. In this case, I am not sure every vote was counted, not in the right way." Now, here's a scary thought to add to that, folks, and it comes directly from the U.S. Constitution. Following the January 23, 1933 ratification of the 20th Amendment that set January 20th as Inauguration Day, with the then current president and vice president's terms ending at precisely 12 noon, if at that time there is no final result in the presidential race, the Speaker of the House as in Nancy Pelosi, would become the acting president of these United States until said race was officially decided, called, and certified. And with that being said, we must now take a deep breath and also remember never to underestimate President Donald J. Trump or his legal team, for time and again both have proven that what was once thought impossible is indeed possible. And here I'm speaking of an 11th hour possibility of a second Trump presidential term, but it's a term that will have to come either via the Electoral College or the Supreme Court, or more likely via a combination of both. That will be explained in a bit. So while President Trump recently stated that he would accept and only then concede defeat if media-anointed President-elect Joe Biden were to attain the must-have 270 electoral votes, don't just assume that Biden will necessarily reach that magic 270 number when the 538 Electoral College delegates meets this upcoming Monday, December 14th, to cast those all-important votes, even though this past Tuesday the Supreme Court rejected a Republican appeal to undo the certification of Pennsylvania's election results. Quote, the application for injunctive relief presented to Justice Alito and by him referred to the court is denied, end quote, were the court's order, an order which did not comment further or suggest any dissent among the court's nine justices. But here it's important to note that the denial only pertains to the emergency injunctive relief suit. It does not deny Representative Mike Kelly's original voter fraud case itself, a case which is still pending before the High Court. So while the Electoral College option for a President Trump victory technically still remains somewhat feasible, albeit it's a slim chance on its own at best, a new case now on the SCOTUS emergency docket, a case out of Texas, might just be the checkmate move we've been waiting for. But before we delve into that case from Texas, first let's revisit the Electoral College for just a bit. In Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution, we find that it's the Electoral College who is the actual determiner of who wins the presidential election, meaning that when one goes to the polls to vote for and hopefully help elect their presidential candidate of choice, what one is really doing is voting for a particular slate of electors who then cast their ballots for president and vice president. Now, here note that while said electors, who are actually appointed delegates, have technically pledged to vote for the candidate who received the most votes in their state, as in winner takes all, except for Maine and Nebraska, who proportionately allocate their votes. Most states do next to nothing to stop their electors from breaking said pledge and voting for the candidate of their choice. And hopefully in this case, that's President Trump. And this is no matter that not too long ago, the Supreme Court did restrict the power of these what would now be called faithless electors by ruling that each state can require its electors to support the winner of their state's popular vote, thus leaving faithless electors to face fines, along with the possibility of being replaced in 32 of our 50 states. But with this particular presidential election being the poster child for how to commit and get away with both voter and election fraud, I'm more prone and so very definitely proud to call those who would be faithless electors actually conscientious electors. For Craig, they now would become electors who willingly choose to take a stand against overt injustice and cast their ballot not for basement-dwelling Joe Biden, but for President Trump, even while knowing they might be called to task.
You know, this is getting into an area here that a lot of people really aren't familiar with. You know, when you start talking about faithless electors, and, you know, there's always kind of been a stigma attached to all that. Mm-hmm. Historically, is there precedent for them to not vote the way that one would just kind of automatically think they would? Is there that historical precedent?
Well, actually, there is, you know, and if a majority of the current electors in any given state did break ranks by, you know, ignoring the winner-takes-all pledge, you have to note that this would not be the first time it would be done so. For the Electoral College has on 5 different occasions in the past picked a president who garnered fewer popular votes than his opponent. In 1824, the electors chose John Quincy Adams over Andrew Jackson. In 1876, they chose Rutherford B. Hayes over Samuel Tilden. In 1888, it was Benjamin Harris over Grover Cleveland. In 2000, their choice was George W. Bush over Al, I invented the internet, Gore. And thankfully, in 2016, they chose Donald J. Trump over the media's anointed Hillary, I should say Obama shill, Hillary Rodham Clinton. And know that the information I've cited regarding the Electoral College and its delegates are things one expects would pertain to what would be a fair and transparent election, not to an election riddled with overt in-your-face fraud, which is unfortunately the hallmark of this 2020 election. And with all the evidence now coming to light regarding fraud having been committed, the Georgia video that I have below shows just some of that fraud, means the laws regarding November's election integrity have knowingly and willingly been corrupted by those with a decidedly dangerous political agenda, a criminal offense if ever there was one. But until the Department of Justice steps in to do the right thing, and with William Barr as Attorney General, I would not hold my breath for that, it's up to the Republican majority of state legislators to ignore their state's winner-take-all pledge and appoint their own electors, which federal law does allow said legislatures to do if their states have, quote, failed to make a definitive choice by the actual day the Electoral College meets. And really, how can a definitive choice be made when voter fraud investigations are still ongoing, and with the aforementioned Texas case now on the high court docket? Simply, they cannot, nor should they be made, especially when the only actual Electoral College decision deadline required by the Constitution itself is the January 20th deadline of 12 noon. Now, as for the Texas case, the real hope for a smoking gun, a case that if the justices do the right thing as per the Constitution, we will rightfully see the election going President Trump's way. And here we first saw a legal brief being filed with the U.S. Supreme Court urging the justices to look into the conduct of the election in Pennsylvania, where their state court ignored the Constitution in regards to the conduct of the election. In fact, Article 1, Section 4 of the Constitution states that, quote, the times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature, end quote. And that means that the power for the conduct of federal elections is held by the state legislatures in each state, but that in states like Pennsylvania and the other battleground states, the judicial branch, as per the brief, attempted to, quote, seize control of these duties and obligations and to set their own rules. Hence, Craig, these actions do appear to be unconstitutional. Simply, if such an action is unconstitutional for Pennsylvania, it surely is unconstitutional for other states as well.
Well, isn't that kind of what Attorney General Paxton in Texas has planted his flag on in this case? And as I understand it now, I think there are 18 or 19 other states that are standing shoulder to shoulder with Texas, including my state of Nebraska and your state of Florida.
Right, right. I mean, Florida was one of the first to sign on, and now many others. In fact, Attorney General Paxton, he actually directly petitioned the Supreme Court, as in he filed a lawsuit against the battleground states of Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, claiming that charges made in these states regarding election procedures due to the COVID pandemic actually violated federal law by instituting changes to election policies, whether they be, quote, through executive fiat or friendly lawsuits, thereby weakening valid integrity. And Paxton wrote that these changes, which actually do require a state constitutional amendment to authorize said changes, allowed for voter fraud to occur. And thus the high court should push back the December 14th deadline by which states must appoint their presidential electors. So here, regarding the Electoral College, the Texas case might win where the Pennsylvania case failed. Also in this lawsuit, Paxton and his attorneys rightfully stated that, quote, that deadline, however, should not cement a potentially illegitimate election result in the middle of the storm, to which he then said that he and the others then said they're both most assuredly right. But in more simplistic terms, what the Texas AG rightfully did was ask the Supreme Court to block said battleground states from casting, quote, unlawful and constitutionally tainted votes when the Electoral College assembles. And this request now ties directly back into what I stated earlier regarding the Electoral College, as this newest lawsuit, if won, will not only affect the Electoral College vote, but will decide who really won the 2020 election, which I believe was President Trump. And to give this lawsuit even more punch, if you will, know that Arkansas, Alabama, Florida, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, South Carolina, and South Dakota, and those also had 17 others added to it as I went to publication, have all announced that they will be joining Texas in said lawsuit. And also know that this case cannot and is not being ignored by the SCOTUS, because it's a fact that when a state files a lawsuit against another state, said lawsuit, by law, goes straight to the Supreme Court, which it now has and is now on the court's emergency docket. And this is much to the chagrin of Michigan AG Dana Nissel, who claimed that Paxton's lawsuit was but a, quote, publicity stunt, not a serious legal pleading. Now tell that to the Supreme Court, Miss Nissel. So while the justices originally set a Thursday date for the four battleground states to respond to Paxton's claim, their responding to said claims does not signal the end, for the SCOTUS by law must still hear the case. Hence, it's on their docket. And I wouldn't be surprised if Senator Ted Cruz is the one to argue the case before the High Court, for no one knows the constitutional legalities of the law better than he does. And he has now today stated that he would probably be the one. So now we sit and wait for the Texas case to be heard and for the evidence to be presented. And if the justices do the job the Constitution tasked them with, while most definitely putting partisan politics aside, and if they pare down all the allegations to simply following the letter of constitutional law, they will not only rule in Texas's favor, but call to task those who willfully and with malice intended try to sway what is supposed to be a free and fair election. And for the uninformed and misinformed, this simply means that all legal votes must be and will be counted, and that all illegal, fraudulent, and unverified votes must be and will be thrown out. And really, isn't that what the Constitution and we the people should not only ask for but demand? I would surely hope so. Case closed.
You know, it's going to get real interesting. Ted Cruz was asked by President Trump to present oral arguments in this case if it gets to that point. But there are three different ways the Supremes could handle this. They could either turn it down and say we're not going to hear the case.
Right.
They could issue a ruling on the case, up or down, without hearing oral arguments, or they could go the route of oral arguments and then make a ruling. So, you know, if it gets to the oral argument stage, if the Supremes say, yeah, we want to hear oral arguments, Ted Cruz is going to be the man.
Right. Now, and he's been before the Supreme Court and won cases a number of times in the past.
Yes. Yes, he has. He's and he, like you said, he's probably the foremost authority on the Constitution in Congress.
Yes.
You know, now you also brought up in this article, the whole situation there with, I got to scroll up here and see if I can find it. Cause I was trying to follow along here, but, you talk a little bit in there about the reply and the time frame, and yesterday was the reply date. Okay.
Yes.
They did make a reply, and apparently, as I understand it, the reply had basically nothing to do with the charges that were made by Paxton, the attorney general out of Texas. So Texas then had their opportunity to reply to the reply, and they did that today. And basically what Texas says is to the justices on the Supreme Court, they said, the reply you got doesn't even address our concerns, and that is why this case must come before the court. And they're right.
Well, basically what the Democrat side did was they tried to get the case thrown out on deadline because they said it came too close to when the Electoral College meets, it was rushed through, blah, 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 et cetera. However, when you have allegations this seriously, deadlines should be thrown by the wayside. You are dealing with the election of the President of the United States. They pushed all the deadlines aside in 2000 for Al Gore and that hanging chad fiasco, which was a joke. Okay, they can do it again because the Constitution itself clearly states the only deadline that matters is that the electors have cast their vote by January 20th. So this nonsense with deadlines, the Democrats, they think, you know, ha, 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 we made them go through the lower courts and waste all this time. That was done deliberately.
Right.
So deliberately, the Supreme Court should say, wait a minute, the Constitution says January 20th. We're going to hear it. We pushed it back in 2000. We're pushing it back now. Let's see if they at least have the guts to hear the case.
This is going to be a very, very interesting weekend. Do you hear what the justices decide to do? Now, I said earlier, and I'll stand by it, I the way I see this going, it's either going to be a split decision in favor of Texas, or it's going to be a unanimous decision against Trump. I just don't see a split decision going Trump's way. So I think it's going to go one way or the other. First thing they have to do is decide to hear the case. And we don't even know if they're going to do that or to take up the case.
If they don't do that, if they don't at least hear a case with this severity And with all the evidence that has come to light, including Rudy's two new videos, then the Supreme Court should get the hell off the bench. All of them.
You know, it's hard to argue with that. If they hear the case, I think there's a good chance it will go Trump's way. Mm-hmm. Because I the evidence is there. They dilly-dallied around with the way these votes are cast and counted, and they didn't seek the proper state Supreme Court justification for doing it. That's wrong. That's unconstitutional. That breaks the law. I think that's a case that can be made.
I do too.
So they have to agree to take up the case. If they do, I think there's a better than average chance it goes Trump's way. If they don't want to hear oral arguments, then I kind of think they're going to just flat out not hear the case, and then I think all hell breaks loose.
If they, I'm serious, Craig. If they do that, if they don't even hear the case, I would support anybody that says second American Revolution.
Yeah.
If they don't even have the decency to hear the case,
I think all hell breaks loose if they decide not to hear the case.
Yeah, I think it will too.
So the title of the op-ed, folks, is Trump's Last Two Stands. Easy to find. There's great information in here. You need to be aware of this going into this weekend so that when things happen over the weekend, you're going to have a better understanding of what's going on. Trump's Last Two Stands. Go to RSPRadio1, that's the number one, .com. Okay, it's right there on the homepage, right at the top of the homepage, in fact. And you can click on that. It'll give you a link. You go to Diane's blog. You can read the whole thing. You can grab the link, and you can share and share and share and share because, well, let's be honest, Diane can't.
Not until December 29th when Craig and I will be on our little Christmas hiatus.
You're in, you're not really in Facebook jail. You're more like on house arrest.
Right. I can post to pages and I can post on timelines, but I cannot post or comment on any groups. And remember, I'm in this 2-month Facebook jail sentence for breaking a community standard that does not exist.
You see, the way you say that, one would think you had a problem with that.
You know, Facebook has a big problem with me because I tell the truth.
There's a certain amount of contention in your voice when you say that. I got in Facebook jail for breaking a standard that doesn't even exist. You know, I mean, gee whiz, Diane. Are you upset by that? I would think by now you would come to expect it.
No, what I'm really upset about is they never listen to any appeal, if you want to call it that. Even when I told them and showed them, there is no thing that you're talking about in my very simple post. And it was, I believe, Craig, it was a post advertising our show.
I think it was. And when this all happened, folks, Diane calls me up. She's like, "You're not going to believe this." And she told me, you know, what the violation was. And I said, I don't know what that is.
And so we looked it up.
I'm sitting here. I go get into Google and I go look it up and I look up their community standards. It ain't there.
No.
It's just non-existent.
No. And I had some experts, quote unquote, look at it and they're like, "This is nowhere."
Yeah. What the hell is this?
What are they talking about?
Well, you know, so folks, here's the deal. Go to rspradio1.com, get Diane's link, and share it. Share it and share it everywhere. It's going to be a very interesting, very busy weekend, and I think the Supremes are going to come down with something one way or the other on this. And Nelly, it's going to get hot. So
let's put it this way, folks. If you are religious in any sense, please say a prayer that this goes President Trump's way, because if it doesn't, it's going to be a hell of a 4 years.
You know, even if you're a druid or a druid reformed, kiss a shrubbery.
Yeah.
Something. Anything.
Yeah. And if you're if you're part Wiccan, you know, cast a spell. Anything
whatever
will be
you got.
Accepted at this point.
Yep. Whatever you got. Let's go.
Yes.
Folks, we made it to the top of the hour here. We got to take a little break, get station ID, and one segment to go.
Hi guys, Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Folks, we're having computer issues. Well, not we, me. I've been fighting computer issues for the last 24 hours. Ooh, yeah, you just heard that little skip there. You heard him in that break. Holy crap. Hopefully we're going to get through this last segment, Diane.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not going to hold my breath on it, but hopefully we're going to get through it. So let's get started. COVID-19 and fraud 2020. You know, about a week ago, I said the situation regarding the 2020 election was about to get a whole lot more interesting. Well, it just got a whole lot more interesting. While there are half a dozen key battleground states where voter fraud appears to be rampant, right now, Pennsylvania seems to be ground zero. Pennsylvania's Supreme Court has a 5-2 liberal majority, and it should come as no surprise that the PA High Court sided with liberal Governor Tom Wolf in a case brought by Representative Mike Kelly and representative from he's a representative, a Republican, I should say, from Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvania GOP congressional candidate Sean Parnell in regard to this election. Well, that case simply stated that the state of Pennsylvania has a law in the books that says non-absentee vote by mail without constitutional amendment is illegal. Okay. The claim, as per the lawsuit by Kelly and Parnell, was that the vast majority of the Commonwealth's mail-in votes in this past presidential election could be thrown out, as they are unconstitutional. Naturally, liberal Wolf doesn't think the rules or his state's constitution apply to him or to the liberal agenda, and he filed an appeal after Kelly and Parnell were granted a stay by Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court Judge Patricia McCullough. It would have meant that the overwhelming vast majority of Pennsylvania's mail-in ballots would have had to have been tossed. And since we're well aware that way more Democrats voted by mail than did Republicans, Biden's margin of voter fraud victory in Pennsylvania would evaporate, and the winner in that key battleground state would have been President Donald J. Trump. Some 30 Republican lawmakers of the state legislature in Pennsylvania even signed a document in amicus with Kelly and Parnell's case, and they were trying to get the U.S. Supreme Court to rule on their case, but the SCOTUS turned down their appeal earlier this week. With the SCOTUS declining the case, all is not lost, not yet anyway. Even without the SCOTUS hearing that particular appeal, the situation begs a question. Why would liberals ensure such a low, or to be more honest, a nearly non-existent standard of verification to mail-in ballots, while at the same time demanding such a high standard of verification for in-person voting? Seems clear, doesn't it? Mail-in votes are very easy to mess with, and Diane, as we've seen for the past month, there seems to be no end to the number of recently discovered mail-in ballots appearing out of thin air.
Well, and you know what? I bet even after whatever decision the SCOTUS comes to, suddenly tons of mail-in ballots are going to be found, including military ballots that weren't counted.
Oh, I'll bet you're right. Let me give you folks an example of what I'm talking about here. Earlier this week, in an election that's razor thin, Republican challenger Claudia Tenney is clinging to a 12-vote lead over liberal incumbent Anthony Brindisi. And that's in New York's 22nd Congressional District House race. Well, guess what? More than a month after election night, 12 mail-in ballots were magically found in a drawer in rural Chenango County. Imagine that. When the liberal needs 12 votes to force a runoff, 12 ballots suddenly appear out of a drawer.
Mm-hmm.
How much you want to bet, even if one of those magically found votes goes for Republican challenger, more mail-in ballots will be discovered somewhere else, maybe in a box of socks at the District 22 Salvation Army. How can I say that with such a degree of certainty? Well, because last week in that same district, 55 mail-in ballots were magically found, and of those, 11 were cast by unregistered voters, making them illegal. Like I said before, there are some half a dozen key battleground states where voter fraud appears to have been employed. And as I also said earlier, things are getting more interesting in that regard. In fact, I give you the great state of Texas. Texas filed a lawsuit against the states of Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia, and Pennsylvania, contesting those states' election results, and Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton claims in his lawsuit that pandemic-era changes to election procedures in those states violated federal law, and he's asked the U.S. Supreme Court to block those states from voting in the Electoral College. So, how does something like this work? Well, when one state sues another state, or in this case, four other states, by law, it does an end around bypassing all the messy and time-consuming state courts and lower federal courts, and then moves directly to the U.S. Supreme Court. Know that this is far from a sure thing. First, the Supremes would have to agree to hear the case, and they most likely will, but it's not a done deal. It's a Hail Mary play, let's be honest. Personally, I don't hold out much hope, Diane, for a favorable Republican outcome from this. But who knows?
Right, and it's especially interesting that, you know, we all know the court turned down the Pennsylvania case. So, what did Pennsylvania do today? They joined the Texas lawsuit. Very ironic.
Isn't that bizarre?
Yes, they might actually pull off what they couldn't do alone by doing it by hooking into the other major lawsuit.
The state of Pennsylvania is now suing the state of Pennsylvania.
Right.
I mean,
the state legislature of Pennsylvania, which is Republican held, is suing Pennsylvania.
Can this get any weirder?
No.
Look, if Kelly and Parnell were correct regarding their case in Pennsylvania, then it would have certainly bolstered the case of Texas v. Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia, and Pennsylvania, but since the SCOTUS didn't take up that appeal, there is a lack of momentum for the Texas case. Bear in mind that Paxton, the Texas AG, is not exactly of the highest character, as he's been caught in an extramarital affair, and he's been accused by people in his own office of dirty deals done for political gain. He's denied those allegations, and unless proven, that's all they are. It's allegations. But his attempt with this lawsuit may well be the Hail Mary to save his own political career more so than an attempt to salvage a Trump victory from the jaws of voter fraud defeat. In other news, in fact, the only other news, COVID is still very much a political weapon as we head into Christmas. Liberals started insisting that we all mask up in May, because that, they said, would stop the spread of the virus. It didn't. They told us we had to close down businesses and stay at home to stop the spread of the virus. That didn't work either. After that, we weren't allowed to go to funerals, supposedly so as not to affect dead liberal voters. And still, we were supposed to be wearing masks. We went all summer with this state and that state mandating this and that and the other thing to stop the spread of the rampaging COVIDs while businesses went out of business, but the numbers just grew and grew and grew. Now, why do you suppose that happened? It happened because it was all part of the liberal agenda. COVID was a key part of the vote-by-mail fraud scheme, and liberals just had to keep it around long enough to serve that purpose. Now, we're staring Christmas right in the eye, and again, we're being told by liberals that we should not travel, shouldn't gather with family or friends, and should be wearing masks even inside our own homes. Why? Well, to stop the spread of the rampaging COVIDs, of course. Joe Biden says he's going to ask all Americans to cower behind masks for 100 days after his supposed inauguration. That, if it happens at all, will be on January 20th. That means liberals, for the sake of their agenda, want Americans to hide from their own shadows until April 30th. Diane, I fear having run out of coloring books, crayons, therapy puppies, and bottles of bubbles, liberals have found a new security blanket, the mask. And like a 2-year-old with his favorite bankie, it does nothing but provide a false sense of security. In fact, there is scientific data that shows that nearly 80% of the people who have contracted COVID have worn a mask in public most of the time.
Yeah, and what people are ignoring is the mask is not going to give you protection. It'll give you a small modicum of protection, but remember, a virus where 100 million of them can fit on the head of a pin, can go into you through the gaps in the masks. If they can go actually through the mask, try holding some of your masks underwater, folks, and you'll be surprised how easily the water comes through. If it comes through, it can also, you know, be coughed out, sneezed out, etc. I mean, this whole thing is a joke.
It is.
It's an absolute joke. They fail to allow herd immunity to even take a small foothold, and we're paying for that.
You know, that 80% of people who contracted COVID wore masks, that's a number liberals don't want you to know. But it's not the only number they don't want you to know. Sure, they're giddy about telling you how many new cases of the COVID there are every day, but how many people who test positive never showed any single symptoms either before or after they were tested? Nobody knows, because that number doesn't fit into the liberal agenda. We know that better than 99% of the people who get COVID survive the COVID, but liberals want you to believe that if you get the COVID, you're a goner. That's why none of us are supposed to leave the house. How about this? If you're scared that you're going to get the COVID, you stay at home and let the rest of us go about our own damn business. That seems reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in places like New York City, it's COVID mandate-a-palooza, where people are told to, you know, cover up, mask up their governor, their mayor, the mainstream media propagandists. Mask the hell up, they say. Stay the hell at home. Save yourselves from the rampaging COVIDs. But is that even working in such a deep blue enclave? No. No, it's not. It seems that New Yorkers, tired of all the mandate nonsense, took off and traveled to Art With Me. That's a 4-day art and music beach festival in Tulum, Mexico. And while in Mexico, they drank and danced, probably smoked some things that you can't get up here, and a bunch of them caught the COVID. The event was held November 11th through the 15th. There was hardly a mask in sight, and social distancing was not part of the party. Now, some 60 to 70% of positive COVID tests in New York City are from people who either went to or have been around somebody who went to the COVID dance party in Mexico. Why? Because they spent all spring and summer and well into the fall wearing masks in New York, social distancing in New York, and staying at home in New York. They spent months and months disinfecting everything in sight, washing their hands with germ-killing stuff 30 times a day. They had no natural immunity to the rampaging COVIDs that they could have had through herd immunity. Liberals will gleefully tell you that the whole mask up while ducking and dodging every germ in the Western Hemisphere is what kept those people from getting sick. And that's why we must all do as Dementia Joe says, and mask up until April 30th. But all it takes is a minimum of one working brain cell to get to the truth. Let's say we're do as we're told by the socialists and the Marxists, and we mask up until April 30th. What's going to happen just a few days after that? Well, hello, Cinco de COVID-19. In other words, other news, Mount Everest is 3 feet taller than we thought it was. So there's that.
That is more interesting than the rampaging COVIDs.
Well, it is. You know, I mean, you think about it, we've pretty much had what we thought was a pretty good idea of the size of Mount Everest. But turns out we're off by three feet. we were a yard off.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, think about that. Everybody's got to mask up until April 30th, and then you take the masks off and Cinco de COVID-19.
Right. I mean, this has gotten ridiculous, folks. And, you know, I know the vaccine is coming out soon, and I know it's going to offer some modicum of protection. But you got to know, it's two doses. The reactions happen with the second dose, and not everyone can take it. And this is key to note. If you have in the past been allergic to an inoculation, before you take the COVID vaccine, you must tell your doctor. There are ingredients in it that could cause an anaphylactic reaction to people who have problems with inoculations. Like, let me make it simpler. My two kids were allergic to the pea part of the DPT shot, allergic to the degree that they both, when they were babies, had anaphylactic reactions to it. Everything turned out okay. They continued through their regular series of shots as DT instead of DPT. And chances of catching pertussis are very, very small. Okay, is that one of the shots that might be detrimental to taking the COVID vaccine? Nobody knows until they, if they go for the vaccine, until they ask their doctors.
Right.
Okay, am I personally going to take the vaccine? Not on your life.
You know,
remember, look at it. No, Craig, this is serious. Look at it this way. It takes between 15 and 20 years to get a cancer drug on the market because it goes through countless tests for side effects, safety, this, that, and the other thing. And millions of people every year die of cancer. But here it is, we're supposed to trust a vaccine that's only going through a few months of testing? I don't think so.
Well, you know, it's too bad they didn't make it in suppository form so people could shove it up. Well, anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you say that, you know, your sons got through that you know, inoculation snafu okay, but I don't know, Diane. One of them turned out to be a space cadet, so I...
One of them, and folks, Craig is being funny here, but one of them is involved with the space program.
I lovingly refer to him as a space cadet. But
yeah, space cadet who's working on the moon and Mars missions.
But, you know, Diane will tell me, she'll say, my son did this today, or my son said that, and I'll have to say, which one? The space cadet or the other one?
And the other one is a master of bioengineering.
Imagine what they could have been had they not had to go through that snafu with an inoculation. They could have actually amounted to something.
I know, a doctor of astrophysics and planetary sciences from MIT and one with a master's. Else could they have done? Run for president?
All I'm saying is if their mentality hadn't been so stunted so early in their lives, they may have amounted to more. That's all I'm saying.
But no, folks, this is serious. I know people are desperate for this vaccine, but I'm going to say it again and again. We don't need a vaccine. We need an antidote. So if someone gets it, they are given an antidote that cures it.
Right.
We've got plenty of treatments that help the person's, you know, body and time get over it. We need an all-out cure for it. Just like, think snake venom. If you get bitten by a particular snake, it's going to kill you. However, they rush in a toxin, an antidote, and you're fine. This is what we need for COVID. Because also, the vaccine that's coming out now is for this strain of COVID-19. What happens in the fall when the next strain comes out? This strain becomes useless. This vaccine becomes useless. You got to really think this through.
Folks, the commentary is COVID-19 and Fraud 2020. And once again, if you go to rspradio1.com, it's on the homepage. You can click in there, you get the link, you can share it anywhere you want. We hope you do.
And you get to look at funny pictures of all different things and masks.
Well, and I'll tell you, I took this COVID part as seriously as I possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
And I illustrated the commentary thusly.
the milk jug one is the best.
That one, that's a classic.
Yes.
That one's a classic. And I'm telling you, when I finish the gallon of milk that's in the fridge, I'm thinking of doing it. I really am.
You'll be unique. And the Chihuahua is quite cute.
That Chihuahua, I mean, I don't know where that Chihuahua is going, but it's fully dressed and masked.
Yes.
I mean, it must have a big, big plan for the night or something. I don't know.
And it probably has four booties on its feet.
Well, and there's even a mask picture of Joe Biden. He's got it over his mouth, his nose, and his eyes.
Right.
and it's a real photo. It's not Photoshopped.
Right.
Okay, so, yeah, you'll have a little fun with that. RSPRadio1.com is where you want to go for that stuff. Diane's op-ed is in there. This commentary is in there. And lots and lots and lots of other stuff.
Yes.
You know,
that we keep updated every day but Sunday. Even we need a day's rest.
That website has got a lot of great information in it every day. Yes. Breaking news, regular news stuff. For instance, if you go into the business section today, computer, do me a favor and go to the business section here. Well, it's just someone open up for me. Oh, there we go. U.S. producer price increase modestly in November.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. World news. Today we've got Hezbollah militant Salim Ayish given a life sentence for Hariri killing. Diane, what'd you find in technology today?
Oh, dear, I shut down the site. Are you going to really make me...
I'll pop it open here.
No, hold on. I go faster than you can. I'm in it. Let's see.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm going to have to read that one.
Yeah, in technology for today, I posted facial recognition fate could be decided by 2021.
That's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Science, Elon Musk Starship prototype makes big impact.
Yes, and lock and load for today. And you'll see the week's things. It's not just one article. It's for the week. In lock and load, we have Biden aide promises big, bold executive actions on guns. In other words, they're getting ready to try to take away our guns, folks.
Again.
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 Right? As if it ever stopped.
History... Waldemar Hofkind, the vaccine pioneer the world forgot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we got political humor, we've got videos.
Video.
Oh, the podcast. If you miss any part of this show and you want to hear it again, you go to the podcast button at rspradio1.com. You become one of the pod people. We've got them all in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so... check it out, rspradio1.com. And again, we apologize. I apologize not only for the computer issues. My computer's been acting up for the last 24 hours, and it was doing it again in the last break. And I don't know if it's doing it as we're talking or not.
I don't hear anything bad coming through.
Well, then that means maybe it's holding on.
Yeah.
Okay, but on the off chance that it didn't, we apologize for that. And during that last segment, I swallowed wrong, and I just about killed myself.
Oh, dear.
You know, apologize for that, too. But, Diane, it's Friday night. The weekend's staring us right in the face. I know you're going to spend most of your weekend watching college football like I am.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, I could tell people, our listeners know, that I was hit by a car.